In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
And thank you for tuning in to another episode of Apocalypse Video, your source in the wasteland for all things cinema. I'm your host, David Snyder, and joining me again are fellow cinephiles and human batteries. Well, two of them anyway. Ryan Caldwell.
Howdy, howdy.
Michael Lothouse.
I'm ready to jack in.
And former human friend, now mechanical overlord, Chad Greiner.
You missed your last blue pill dosage, Dave.
Oh, right, Chad. Sorry, Chad. How forgetful of me. Let me just take that now. You guys, do not take your blue pills. Chad has us ensnared in a computer simulation.
I can read your lips, Dave.
Oh, Chad, no. You misunderstand. I was merely explaining the backstory of the movie we're going to watch this week, right, guys?
Oh, yeah, of course. What was the name of that movie again, Dave? It sounded great and not at all related to our current situation.
Well, Mike, I'm glad you asked. I'm also glad you made that distinction, as it would be crazy to think we're living in a computer simulation concocted by my former human friend, now possibly malevolent AI.
Right, not at all. That's not what's going on here.
Exactly.
Indeed. The movie I'm talking about is The Animatrix, the anime follow-up slash sidequel, is that right? To the hugely popular Matrix franchise from the early 2000s.
All right, so finally getting some Keanu.
I know, he's breathtaking, isn't he?
Damn right.
Keanu Reeves is an instigator and not to be trusted.
Oh, right. You're all knowing after all. That's absolutely right. Oh shit, is that a war party?
No, it's worse. You see who's riding in the lead? That's a Morton Hoof himself.
Hoof? Well, no worries, guys. He's a friend. I worked out a deal, remember?
What deal? You never told us about anything about a deal with a Morton Hoof.
Do you know what he does to people who displease him?
Yes, which is why I worked out a deal. We offer him unfettered access to our collection of films, and in return, he gives us fresh water and food. And doesn't brutally murder us and do things with our skin.
Behold! His Excellence Morton Hoof!
Ah, Hoof, my friend, how goes it?
I am well. I was just on my way to collect tribute from the peasants in Sector 3 when I received word from Chad that you are about to watch a cartoon. An anime, to be specific. My favorite type of cartoon.
Wait. Chad told you we were watching a movie?
Chad, have you been working with a Morton Hoof this whole time?
Please, calm yourselves. I simply instructed my cybernetic mechanic to hack your friend's mainframe and notify me whenever you were about to discuss an animated feature. Nothing to worry about.
That wasn't part of the deal, Hoof.
Mind your insolence, Video Man. Lest you forget, I am your sole source of Taco Bell.
Taco Bell? You've been hiding Taco Bell from us this whole time?
Dave, you son of a bitch!
Now, guys, let's not get crazy here. He only gave me one cheesy gordita crunch, that's all. I swear to God. But we have fresh fruit and vegetables now, and water. Haven't you wondered where all that's been coming from?
Who gives a crap about water and vegetables? I want a beefy five-layer, goddammit!
Yeah!
And maybe a couple Baja Blasts, if you don't mind.
Silence! I grow weary of your sniveling over low-grade meat and nacho cheese. I am here for anime! Now, shall we proceed with the film, or shall I unleash my awesome fury upon you?
Okay, but we want Taco Bell, too. and extra jalapeno sauce on all of our burritos.
Yeah, and from now on, the only thing Dave gets are those cinnamon twists.
So be it.
Cinnamon twist.
I like the cinnamon twists.
Those suck.
Enough. The day is wearing thin, and I grow tired of your whining. Chad, activate Animatrix Trailer 1.
Hey, that's my job.
It will be done, oh great one.
Now on DVD and video, from the creators of the Matrix trilogy.
I'm going back to the Matrix, and I want you to come with me.
What is the Animatrix?
You've stepped to the edge of the looking glass.
Experience the extraordinary fusion of CG animation and Japanese anime.
Come get some.
In a groundbreaking collection of 9 animated stories from 7 visionary directors.
We know the truth now.
That takes the world of the Matrix to its unimaginable limits.
Fly, baby. Fly.
Animatrix. Discover how deep the rabbit hole really goes. Own the DVD and CD album.
Well, that was Animatrix, and you know, guys, I gotta be honest. I feel better now after having taken that blue pill. I like Hoof. How do you feel? I mean, you took one.
Oh, I feel... Well, that blue pill really did something to me.
Right.
I feel fine.
Yeah, you know, I always feel after I take a blue pill like everything's going to be okay.
Me too. Me too. Well, Animatrix, an interesting movie. I had actually never seen this. I remember when it came out in the early 2000s, it was like a big deal because, at least from my perspective, I can't remember like a movie or a series that like inspired, I mean, maybe aside from Star Wars, that inspired this much like side stuff around it, you know?
Yeah, it like at the time it was just so, I mean, the Matrix has always been kind of big, but it's hard to like overstate how huge the Matrix was in that time, post Matrix but before any of the sequels came out.
Yeah, well, because it was such a huge movie. I mean, that just, and at the, I remember the end of the Matrix when he ends up flying, spoiler, when he flies at the end, I was just like, my world just like expanded. Like, I had seen Superman the movie, I'd seen people fly in movies, but somehow when he does it in that movie, it just took it to a whole nother level, and it introduced you to the possibilities of where the world of this movie could go.
Just couldn't fathom where it could
go. No, I couldn't, and I was waiting on bated breath for the sequel, and then we got it, and I gotta be honest, like, if we're just talking just sort of the Matrix.
Yeah, let's see what people's thoughts around this table over the...
Before we get into Animatrix?
Yeah.
I remember really liking Reloaded. It was all, I kind of liken it to Pirates of the Caribbean. Like, I remember at the time liking Dead Man's Chest. Is that the second one?
I don't know.
It was, like, kind of action-y.
No one knows.
Where's that voice coming from? Oh my God. Is that Jackie? She's still alive?
The vents?
Surely not. Oh, shit. Well, I remember, I liken it to Dead Man's Chest. I remember at the time thinking this is like kind of, it's like, eh, but the action is fun. And then the third one came and I thought it totally shit the bed a little bit. But that was then. I need to rewatch them. I might feel differently now, but that was my thought then at the time. I don't know about you guys.
I remember being really, because I liked The Matrix a lot, and when the sequels came out, I saw them both in theaters, and I remember being really happy with them, but... I don't think I've seen them since, and I don't really like remember what they were, other than just I remember they got crazy and it got a lot more in. I remember like the Zion dance stuff,
the orgy,
and, yeah, the weird colors, and a lot of just black gross hallways.
Well, the Matrix certainly left a huge impact on myself and everyone else, apparently. But the sequels, I don't really remember as much. I mean, the fanfare around each one was still established, but as far as the mark that it left on you, it was a little bit less. So, and I haven't really seen them since. So, and I wasn't really watching movies with much of a critical eye back then when they were released. I mean, I think I enjoyed them for what they were back then, but I couldn't tell you now if I thought they held up or not with any kind of credibility.
I'll tell you that they do. The Matrix sequels fuck.
And, let me school you, idiots. Sit back and listen Ryan
here. Careful, Ryan. You know who you're talking to here. I don't want to displease Hoof.
I'm dropping truth bombs.
Yeah. This was like the biggest thing. Like by then we were kind of like still like at this time, and I was in high school in 2003 or 4 around that time, and there was freaking the Lord of the Rings was wrapping up, Matrix was happening, and Star Wars was all wrapping up.
And Harry Potter was just getting started.
That's right. Yeah. It was a whole new world of franchises, man.
And, this was my shit, and I was on board and was, like, surprised that people weren't about it. And I get it. Like, I've rewatched them recently, and Revolutions is a little bit less, but I love the world and was all about these Animatrixes and all this stuff. And
well, Animatrix for me was a bigger deal than the sequels, because I was all into anime. I was totally geeking out and stuff like that. And while I was excited for the
young hoof,
I was back when I was still wearing chaps that covered my ass back then. But I was more excited for the Animatrix because it was anime and the Matrix, so it was fusing these two great things. Yeah. And it was just like, I remember getting the DVD, and I was so pumped up about that.
It was such a natural fit too, because the Matrix, you know, the thing about it is it felt like you're watching a live action anime, and that they got the kind of story behind the Animatrix, where let's get these people who influenced us to make short stories in set in the universe. It's like a full circle kind of thing.
Yeah. And everything ties together beautifully in terms of those creative forces that really took part in this product, this artistic product. And I think that, it's really, evident by when you watch it that the care and the influence it's worn on its sleeve and really apparent.
Yeah. And I wish we got more shit like this, because I feel like every now and then a property will come along and something like this will happen. Like I remember like the first thing that comes to my mind is the Twilight Zone movie, where they're like all these people, all these filmmakers like George Miller and Steven Spielberg and John Landis are like, you know, we all love the Twilight Zone when we were growing up, and we're all like awesome filmmakers now, aren't we, guys? Like, why don't we fucking make our own movie? And obviously that had some controversy around it, which we won't get into on this episode.
They're dead, David. They're dead.
Sorry. But I love it. Nevertheless, I love it. Well, I don't condone what happened with that movie. If you want to do like a deep dive, you can go into the archives and the ruins and maybe find out Twilight Zone 1983.
I think we carry it in the store.
We carry it in the store, yeah. But I like it when stuff happens like Twilight Zone, or like they did it for Blade Runner 2049 when that came out. They had some shorts come out, and then obviously Animatrix. Like, I think it's really cool when you got a property like this it's just such a world, and it really inspires a lot of imagination with other filmmakers, and that everybody recognizes it, that Warner Brothers is like, we're going to dump a shitload of money into not even the movies, just this side thing that's going to be like a DVD extra or something like that. I can't remember. Did this get released in theaters?
Just The Flight of the Osiris did.
The prequel to, like, the direct prequel to Matrix Reloaded. Okay, that makes sense, I guess. But it's just baffling to me that, well, it shouldn't be, because the Matrix was such, the first one was such a huge movie.
It's cool too, like something like this takes a franchise, you know, like Star Wars or I don't know, Jurassic Park, or I'm just thinking of other franchises. And one thing that those tend to do over time, Star Wars in particular, it starts to become, even though it's so big and kind of has this massive universe, over time it starts to get smaller and smaller in scope, I think, because it focuses on the same characters and, you know, you're dealing with like the Skywalker family or whatever, which, I don't know, not necessarily bad, but this is kind of interesting because in not featuring really the main characters and the way it's done, it just blows up the universe and really expands in your mind what's going on in a cool way that I wish more franchises did. I like that it's just the universe and not necessarily the characters or the stories that we're used to following.
Well, I think the accessibility of this movie is another thing that is really unique about it. Not just in terms of maybe how you receive it when you watch it, but just in terms of that it was an actual feature-length film, so to speak, because it would show up on the shelves next to The Matrix.
Yeah.
So as opposed to, if you think about Jurassic Park, like there weren't side movies. There were video games or maybe other franchises that have spin-off comic books or something like that. But those are isolated and hard to get to. Like, you're not going to pick up a comic book when you're going to Target or something like that, or back when Target existed. But you can pick up the Animatrix because it's right there on the DVD shelf. So it was really accessible to the masses. And that really is something that speaks to the power of the Matrix and the impact that it left, I think.
I also appreciate the fact that this isn't so dialed into the series that you have to see this in order to like know what's going on in sequels. It's not like, I feel like with other franchises, they kind of do that a little bit. Whereas this one's more like, these are just fun side things that aren't at all, like they don't impact the overall story arc of the films. They're just things that are going on in this universe.
They give you a lot of context though. I mean,
yeah,
of the things that I remember as a kid, my favorite part about this was you get to see the machine take over and just like,
yes,
you see it happen. And I think it's done well. So that seeing it, it's like really satisfying, and you don't have to know exactly how that happened in the movies to enjoy it, but it's cool to have that context and kind of go into the movies then like, oh yeah, I know what happened.
Well, I think this is how you do a good prequel, I think. Like they fill in the gaps. I mean, Morpheus tells you what happened in the little, when they go into the old tube TV in the first movie. Like, we do know
the desert of the real.
The real world. It's like, we do know that it was us who blackened the sky or something. Like, I'm just thinking about that scene when, so I guess we should jump into it. The second Renaissance.
Yeah, it's
the first two parts. Like, it's surprising. It's crazy to me how brutal this takeover is and how it starts. How it starts with just like, you know, robots doing menial tasks and shit, and then humans.
It's basically slave labor, and then them revolting.
Yeah. Well, it's so, and I think to tie into what you were saying, Dave, is that this film kind of has its cake and eats it too, because it is able to offer you everything you need in such a short period of time and then expand upon that. So it starts out with this robot kind of genesis, which reminded me a lot about like iRobot, the way the robots
look. Yeah, I was thinking about that too. Yeah.
And then it kind of jumps into, it just keeps jumping really quickly, but it's very streamlined and very accessible.
It doesn't feel rushed.
It has like a believable arc to it too. Like, you know, the kind of, you know, you first see the robots as just being like servers and waiters, and then cuts to them in the factory. They're running things, and the idea of like eventually one robot revolts, kind of inspiring other robots to the point where they make a clean break with humans and just found their own country. And then it keeps going further on these ideas where, well, yeah, now it's 0-1, and now 0-1 is like, of course, really good at making awesome products and making better AI, which is causing the other economies in the world to take a downturn, and they're doing really well, and the tensions that arise because of that leading to a war. Like it's all on the one hand, it's kind of ridiculous, but on the other hand, it is presented in a pretty believable way.
There's a moment I kind of buy this happening, and I feel like this could happen in a real world scenario where it's like they show that fucking trailer for the car. So I feel like in the real world, despite the robot uprising and all that, and we fuck, you know, they just fuck off to another part. I feel like as humans, even though that happened, it's like as humans, well, we still want cool flying cars, right, guys? So like we would put up with an 0-1 thing, even despite all that backstory with the uprising. I feel like, well, we still want cool shit though. Like we'll let them do their shit.
At least
over
they're
there.
Separate.
At know? Least they're separate, you know. But we still want their cool shit. So yeah, we get their cool shit. Wait a minute, they're making more money than us. Fuck them. You know what I mean? I feel like that's like a believable scenario.
It reminds me of how the United States used to treat China back in the 2010s. You know, like happy to like let them make everything, but then really upset when they start to get a little economically more powerful.
Yeah. Hey, what the fuck? That wasn't part of the deal. But another thing I like that Animatrix does, especially these first two installments, is the shorthand. The shorthand in that how we imprint on the robots, I feel. How they engender like goodwill towards, not goodwill, but I guess the what I'm getting at, like the design of the robot faces is very much just this like, I empathize with the robots and their faces. Like it's that shorthand I was talking about where it's just like, I really feel for the robots and like, goddamn, humans are shitty, aren't they? Well, at least that's me. But
they
like,
they make like robot gore, which I'm always
like when robots die, it's not just like a machine getting fucked up. It feels like a person dying.
Yeah, there's like the shot of the tanks, and the one robot is like kind of like the Tianemen Square. Yeah. That's I think the image
and
it's going for.
Especially when they're dying, they're like, argh!
Yeah, just run over by the tanks.
And, well, and then they throw in the beating of the woman who is basically starts out as a normal
that's
woman,
so
and,
harsh,
and then you find out she's a robot. And I think that really does a good job playing on the sympathy, because if it started out as a robot, you know, you wouldn't have that automatic connection. But it starts out as a human and it builds that connection. And it's a very quick way to do that. And it's very successful, I think.
Can we talk about the most horrific thing I think I've seen in a minute? The grabbing, when the robot grabs the dude's face and just like rips the face in half.
Well, that's one of the advantages of this movie, I think, because animation allows you to do that brutality without coming across as cheesy or going into like B-movie mode or something like that.
There were so many shots in this that were just like so metal. Like,
I was legit horrified. And like when that robot like squeezes that guy's head and like
his brain.
You see his fucking brain. I was like, oh my God, I was not ready for that.
And when the robots are kind of doing their... Like, they're learning how to use the humans as meat bags. And there's the shots of, like, humans just sliced in half and the robots, like, poking at brain and different parts of their body. And they're, like,
making
twitching.
Laugh and cry.
Oh, that was so fucked up.
Yeah, there was a...
Nevertheless, I still empathize with the robots more than humans.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's kind of what happens at the end of the Matrix trilogy. It's, like, this whole thing of, like, they realize what they need to do to keep both living, you know? Like, it's happy at the end. There's a fucking beautiful sunset. It's a beautiful movie. Watch those movies again. But
I feel like after this episode, Ryan's going to go into the wasteland with, like, a sign. Like, Matrix Revolutions was a good movie. It's just like, hear me.
I just hate that the people... It gets so dismissed as of late. Like, especially the...
Well, you can take solace now in the fact that most of them are dead.
Yeah. I mean, back then, back in the old days, it like... Yeah, you know, really hit there was just, like, this... thing, it's just like, come on, guys, there's a lot going on here. It might not be what you wanted, but Jesus.
But maybe you got something better.
Yeah,
than what
maybe
you
got
some.
There was, I guess, like, I mean, we'll go while we're going through these, we can talk about who directed it, who put them together. Like, So this was based on a comic that the Wachowskis wrote, like a comic series that was, that they did for it. Was called, I just had it listed up here. It was called Bits and Pieces of Information. It was the like a story prequel that was in a series of comics that the Wachowskis actually wrote. And then it was directed and put together by a guy named Mashiro Maeda. Is that how you say that?
Mahiro.
Yeah, and he was just like a director. He actually did the concept art for Mad Max Fury Road. So you might be a fan, Hoof, you know? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Because, I've heard of that movie.
Yeah. And then he also worked on Nausicaa and Castle in the Sky.
So basically, all the great anime people, they got working on this
thing. Yeah, so that's what you were just saying in the beginning. It's like finding the best directors in the field and putting them together for this thing. Little Avengers scenario.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I think this is one of my favorites of the whole thing. It's I think it's the best at just the kind of world building.
Regarding the Animatrix, I thought it was really interesting because we talk about the... sympathetic response with them having a vaguely human, you know, face and bipedal like body at the beginning, and as the war between robots and humans rages on, they become less and less human familiar bodied, and as they take over, you know, to the point where they're floating polygons with tentacles and shit, which is like so unhuman, and at the same time that they are dehumanizing the human race into human batteries, into living batteries.
Brutal. Wait, but has Jackie been here this whole time?
Yeah, Dave, she's been here the whole time.
Oh, what's that black cat?
Dave, take your blue pill.
Sorry, okay, I'll take another one. I'm sorry, my bad.
Yeah, that's interesting. The designs of the robots by the end are pretty just disgusting. The tentacles. There's like do you remember the thing where there's like these like parasites that are just like combing the basically waste of dead bodies and sticking like they rip the guy in the mech just like out of the machine. Like don't even take his arms and legs off. It just it's disgusting.
Well, yeah, it's like it's interesting, like because in the first movie you see like Morpheus is talking about if you'd seen the farms where they've done this, blah blah blah. It's like it's still imposing and scary in that movie, but when we see it here happening for the first time, it's like I can't even find the word. It's just fucking terrifying. Yet at the same time, I can't help but think back to the origin of all of this, and it's just like, well. Humans kind of were shitty and started it, but yeah. But at the same time, it's just like these are horrific images, like especially with the needle thing is going and just like going in and just like you know, like it's fucked up. So it's like I'm kind of two minds.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because as all this is happening, as I'm watching this for the first time, I'm thinking ahead to them bringing people out of the Matrix, like, welcome to the real world. And, like, I'm thinking of my mindset watching the Matrix for the first time, thinking, like, oh, man, this is so fucked up, humans, and robots are evil, aren't they? But now I have these two opinions of it now, where it's just, like, I empathize with the origin of the robots and how this all got started, but now it's, like, I think of the Matrix and the people coming out and their whole struggle. So it's really weird. It's like I'm clashing now, like two sides. Like, who do I support almost? You know what I mean?
Well, I think it taps into one of the many interesting social commentaries that this movie offers in terms of, you know, the beginnings of a movement and versus the end of a movement. So, I mean, that's not unique to the robots here in the case. I mean, real history is replete with examples like that, to where maybe an original movement was started out with good intentions or was justified or something like that, can evolve into something very ugly at the end or something like that. So I think there's a lot of good social commentary going on there.
Yeah, I remember when I started hearing about your Citadel celebrations, it didn't start out with so much death at the beginning, and it was more of a kind of a joyous time. But I think over time, it that's when you really started to get into the, you know, the dissection.
Like, are you really going to do this with our guest? Are you really going to imply that he's doing some shitty stuff?
Oh, I just, you know, it's not shitty. I mean, it just had to be done, and someone had to do it.
Well, I just don't know what kind of sources you're getting your news from, but I mean, everything that's going on in the Citadel is completely legit and benign. And
yeah, that's just your opinion, Mike.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'll take another blue pill.
Yeah, take your blue pill and think back to those terrible things that the machines did to humans. And think about that.
Wait, I thought... Hold on. Are we talking about the movie or, like, how we got into this? I thought it was a nuclear explosion and something to do with The Last Jedi. Did that cause a nuclear explosion? I'm trying to remember.
What's the next film?
Sorry, I'll take another blue pill.
What is the next one? Is it Kid Story?
It's Program.
Program.
Directed by whom?
Program?
Yeah, it's the Ninja Scroll one, right?
Oh, yeah, that's the one with Phil Lamar. The, like, samurai Jedi Geki fight. Yeah, that was a cool one. I like it kind of mirrored The Flight of Osiris that we're get to later, but it's like two people fighting that kind of have the same dynamic. They are, you know, maybe in love, I guess. So it was this woman we open on who looks awesome, like a kind of like wolf hair vibe.
It's probably one of the best animated ones, I think.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly indicative of the director, Yoshiaki Kawajiri, who is, like you said, from Ninja Scroll, also Vampire Hunter D and Wicked City and things like that. And that's obviously, I think that this particular portion comes in at this, I guess it's the third film in the sequence, but it really hits you with that style. Mm-hmm. That gets you in the mood for everything that's coming after, because the style kind of changes every time.
And it's something too, like you're watching the first one, when you're watching the second Renaissance, it's like, okay, I get it. This is how the Matrix started. But then this one opens up and it's just like a grassland and this samurai warrior on a horse and flaming arrows. And it's kind of like, what the hell's going on here? And that's one of the cool things about this whole collection is you kind of never know what you're going to get.
I love as you're describing this, Ryan is literally looking off into the distance all wistfully.
Just remembering the times of the breezes through the grasslands.
Yeah, grasslands. I mean, I miss grass.
We have grass at the Citadel.
What?
What?
Yeah.
How do you water the grass?
With our water.
Do you get high from that grass?
What we do with that grass, the business of that grass, stays in the Citadel.
You have
to come visit if you want.
I might have to visit Citadel sometime.
This one is kind of like really a self-contained one, and I feel like it's almost playing off the whole idea is that what's his name in the first Matrix that's like, you know, eating the steak and stuff. It's kind of
the
his,
traitor, the Judas,
like, Cypher.
Cypher. It's almost like a cipher test, like a test for somebody you're dealing with a cipher or whatever his name was. That's like, he's not wrong. Like he's an antagonist that's not wrong. He's just like, I don't want to be in this fucking shitty world. I want to eat steak and it tastes good. Mm. And
yeah, like we basically when you see that fight, it's two trainers or two people who are like training each other, and the guy drops, "Hey, I closed off all communications and I want to just go back into the Matrix, and I figured out a way that we can just Men in Black
together
warp stuff, our brains so we forget it, and we'll be together and happy in the fake world.
Yeah. Which is like, yeah, so it's a cool little self-contained story. Like, I'm wondering if something like this would work if you didn't know the Matrix. Like, that's what I was thinking about while watching all these. Like, do any of them work as, like, without having the context of the Matrix?
I think they do. I think that it alludes enough to the Matrix, but not overbearingly so.
Some of them definitely would work well, for sure. I think this is one that
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. That maybe this one, like, oh, they were in a training simulator, like, you know, in some sort of weird, like, you know, crappy future land. Like, that would make sense, you know?
Well, I think it's the second Renaissance part two where you see that little girl and then she sees her parents and then, like, that's when it's insinuated that even if you haven't seen Matrix, like, she's obviously getting sucked into some different world or something. So, yeah. And I think you made a good point that, like, after all that real world stuff and then you get to this one, it's, like, completely different. I think you can make that jump even if you haven't seen the Matrix.
See, I'm wondering, I was thinking about it too, because I've seen this a bunch of times, but it's been a long time. And I was wondering if, like, because a lot of people didn't like the Matrix sequels, and they're wrong. But I'm wondering if, like, if they kind of went in, like, this route of, like, having, like, samurai full-on things, if people would have been into that, or they would have missed the guns and the black tinted coats and stuff. Because I think people would have been pissed off for that, too. But I would have loved it, you know? So I'm wondering.
I just imagine it comes down to, like, this segment works specifically because the animation is beautiful.
It's very anime. Yeah.
So, and yeah, it's totally anime. Like, it might be the most anime of all the anime sequences, but yeah, I think that this particular sequence is so awesome because it's just so stylized. So I don't know if they made a whole movie of this, if it would be interesting enough to hold.
Or like there's like segments like this or something. Because there kind of is in Matrix when Morpheus and Neo fight in the little training simulation in like an old Japanese like dojo. Yeah.
And because this is animated, it's able to do a lot more interesting stuff with like how they communicate warping between the different battlegrounds they're fighting in. One of my favorite scenes is when they're on a roof and they look at each other and you get the sense that the roof is suddenly extended now to this gigantic space.
Yeah, that's a great sequence.
It does a lot of cool... The animated style is interesting. Like, the characters are so detailed and so fluid and beautiful to watch, and the backgrounds are pretty sparse, and there's a cool contrast there between that. Like, I think it is one of the more beautiful ones of these.
It's short, too, I feel like.
Something I think that because this one is so clearly different, like, visually in terms of its animation style and, like, the, you know, hyper-specific, like, time period that their, like, training sesh is taking place in, it is this interesting, like, weirdly fan fiction setup of we have the excuse, it's like the holodeck in Star Trek where it's we have our all-purpose space where we can go kind of play dress up, and it's interesting because you can kind of have that in the Matrix setup, and they can also look at the whole this whole, you know, animatrix many segmented side story kind of thing as its own, like, weirdly story, like, canon compliant fan fiction as, you know, put out by a major studio.
Do you think if you were in this situation, if we were all in this situation, if we had the ability to have a holodeck or you know, a Matrix available to us, would we all want to do it? I mean, would we want to avoid this our own kind of future?
I mean, I think it's the cool question that this short kind of does, because I was thinking of this short. It's like, out of all the shorts, like, it's kind of like the most, I don't mean this is a bad thing at all, but it's kind of the most inconsequential to overall stuff. I kind of put it as like an entertaining distraction because it's such a minor detail, because this doesn't impact anything else. It's literally just a world building detail. Like, this kind of stuff happens. We're testing people when we bring them out. Like, can they still do they want to jump back into the Matrix after seeing the real world? Can they handle the truth, basically? And I think, Ryan, you said this earlier, like, this guy isn't necessarily wrong. It's just like, I don't think you're a bad person necessarily if you want to jump back into the Matrix.
You're bad that you want to kill people, whatever. Like, But I mean, that's what I mean in the first.
Well, if you want to kill people, but if you just want to jack in and just like, I don't want any of this.
I think
like,
I want to jack in. I'm ready to get out of the. I'm sorry, Dave, but I'm ready to get out of the wastes. And I would eat the steak.
Or take the blue pill. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not the same thing as taking the blue pill.
But one thing I'm wondering about this particular story is because the two characters that are involved, they're clearly like in love. And assuming that the relationship progresses in a normal way, like so they developed it over time, it's just like that means that they're basically being tested continuously. So this isn't like she just woke up and now she's being tested again. Like this is her being tested after, I don't know, maybe a year or even longer.
And maybe she's like a new recruit or something like that to the ship.
But she had to have been like awake for some period of time, right?
Yeah. So pretty rad.
Yeah, like this one and I think the next handful, like again, are like just really cool details in a bigger world. Like none of the like, I think the only ones that are really pertinent to the Matrix franchise storyline are the beginning and the end. The second Renaissance and the last flight of the Osiris. All this other stuff in the middle, as great as it is, it's just and again, like I said before, I like that these are like this, that they're just cool details, cool little side stories that enhance this bigger world.
The other one, though, the kid story one, that one is referenced in Reloaded and stuff like that. Because that's the kid that comes up and is like, Neo, you saved me, whatever. And he's like, wants to be on the ship. Did you know that?
Oh shit! So that's the one where like they bring her out. Is that the one they bring her out? And oh no, I'm thinking of or no, is Kid Story the one? Oh, we're jumping all over the place now. I guess what I'm getting at is we might jump back and forth between
these
stories.
What was the next one?
What is the next one?
The next one's World Record.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah. Let's hit World Record. That one's like nuts.
Okay.
World Record is like another one that it doesn't get brutal, but it has the same. Maybe it's just because I just saw the second Renaissance, but I was on the edge of my seat. All these shots of him running, that like his muscles were just gonna explode out of his body, and it's a cool idea, something we never really seen before. Basically, this guy is such a good runner that he starts to run so fast he wakes himself up.
Yeah, and I think there's an interesting. Aspect, it really taps into this idea of the runner's high. So I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but people who run, there's a point at which they run where they are getting a runner's high, basically, which I don't know, could be something akin to ecstasy.
Don't feel like the pain anymore.
Yeah, exactly, because running is the worst, obviously, but at some point some people enjoy it, or there's something, some reward waiting for you at some point, given all the pain. And it really takes that concept to the next level, which is really cool. I think this might be my favorite, I'm not sure, but this idea of surpassing your human limits that have been imposed on you is cool.
Well, this one does another interesting thing, too. Like, out of all the animation styles, and when you said this one was from the Cowboy Bebop guy, right? Shinjiro Watanabe?
I don't think this one was.
No, this one...
Takeshi Koike.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, one thing that I kind of noticed about this one and one of the Cowboy Bebop dudes, the animation, like, it's very fluid in that, like, it becomes unrealistic, but... the motion kind of it flows, like it flows with the motion of the scene, like so they're running, so it's very much like the arms like become like, remember the wavy guy, like
yeah.
When that happened on screen,
yeah, as he's running, you know, it's basically the way this is set up is he's doing his race, and as he's doing the race, it's cutting back to flashbacks of his life and a lot of people basically saying like, you're running too fast, you're gonna run too fast, your muscles are gonna blow up. And there's one guy talking to him who's like this
coach.
Yeah, coach guy. And the whole time he's talking is he's talking to it with his hands to like a next level. I mean, it's totally unrealistic and ridiculous, but it's because of that animation style.
Well, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say it was it is just like so visually over the top, and like thinking about all of the extra work that goes into this a 1 minute long side character who gesticulates every single syllable, in addition to all of the totally just rubberized arms and legs and face and the racing sequences that do get at that, like, you know, the human body at its like absolute limits looks super fucked up and, not, you know, it looks unhuman.
Yeah. They do a good job of like making like the animation sells the idea that this guy is pushing himself past where it should be. There's those cool shots of just close-ups of different muscles, and as they expand and you see the sweat like shoot out of it.
Well, the I think Jackie made a really good point about describing it as kind of rubbery. And if you look at the director's history, I've only seen – he has another movie called Redline, which is an amazing anime movie about racing. But I think this director in particular is concerned with movement and motion. And so to tie into the kind of his hand – the hand movements of the coach, their things are just constantly in motion. And so – and then obviously it ties into the overall theme of just running so fast, moving so fast, you break free of your limits. And I think that this director is in particular is concerned with motion. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. It really feels like with the themes and everything just kind of comes together real well. Really cool. It's really different and super strange. And I remember thinking like watching this as a kid probably wasn't my favorite, but it's one that's like over the years has grown on me, you know.
I felt the exact same. I remember thinking back and I'm like, I don't really, it wasn't
Where's
like,
guns?
Yeah, like where is this the Matrix? Yeah, like it's a boring part of the Matrix, but now when you think about it, it's like, this is like one of the cool parts of the Matrix because it's for all intents and purposes, it's a normal person breaking free without having any like pill taken or with the help of anyone, really. It's literally himself doing it by himself.
And you have that great kind of coda at the end, you know, after he finishes the race and he's basically paralyzed because of Mr. Smith or whatever. And
just another agent.
Yeah, and it's one of the agents. And
agent.
and then at the end, you know, you see him, you know, the agents are kind of confirming like it's done. He'll never walk again. And then he's like, no. Free and you know he takes those triumphant steps up, and I love that it just kind of cuts there like that's and but there's I think again that implication that he's never gonna be held down and constrained, and like he's very
he'll break free. Neo will save him.
The human spirit.
That said, I side note, I loved the agent's design, like the totally off the wall hairdos and like weird little goatees and jackets.
They had weird costumes.
This one was by far my favorite.
Yeah, maybe it was just another version of the Matrix, you know, like where it was kind of this weird, you know, alternate one.
Yeah, we know there's been different variations of the actual Matrix itself. Maybe this was an earlier program where they had cooler outfits.
I think there's seven. I think that's what the thing is. I forget what the number is.
Well, it's really interesting to think about, you know, you think about those pillars that have all the eggs. If each one of those pillars, they see the world in the Matrix as differently. So this could be actually like the way they see everything. So.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, I'm just speculating.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, it's kind of this is an interesting chunk of the overall story, you know, the stories that we get here, because I feel like starting with this one, the next couple are about different ways that people can get out of the Matrix. Like the next one, for instance, Kid's story is about the kid. So this is getting into the Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah, right? This is I think the most beautiful of all the. This is my favorite, just from a pure what. The you know the animation of it on the screen it's just there I don't know how you even describe the style of this animation.
Well, what I find is interesting about this one is so we were talking about different ways that people can get out of the Matrix. Like this one's interesting because it literally involves the death of someone, like death and then the reemergence into the real world. Like because I was thinking about that because it's just like I thought if you died in the Matrix you die in real life, but in this instance the kid is dreaming about his oncoming death. Or his impending death, which is interesting.
Yeah, and it's almost and there's like a little bit of dialogue at the end where it actually has Trinity and Carrie Ann Moss and Keanu talking about like I can't believe you brought him back to life. I didn't know it was possible, and he's like anything is possible, whatever, because he's the one. And I had to correct myself that Neo was the sixth one. So,
well, thank God we got that figured out. yeah, it's cool too. This one, you know, again, we've talked about how different all these are. This one almost kind of starts out with kind of low stakes. It does. It's not even necessarily sci-fi for a minute. It's just kind of a kid in the city waking up who seems he's like talking on chat rooms, seems lonely, and you just have these gorgeous shots of him skateboarding into school. That again is towards the end is basically done the same way, but the stakes are really high now. He's trying to escape from all these feds looking for him.
Yeah, but I thought it was interesting. Ryan, you said that this was your favorite as a kid.
It was. I think this one and the one with what's the one with like the haunted house were like two of my favorites as a kid.
One's. I think that's Beyond.
Yeah. And I think that had a lot to do just. Like, I think that maybe not right away my favorites, but like maybe like when I got like maybe when I was 18 or something.
They well, were both of them like, involve adolescence, like finding out the truth.
Yeah. And I don't know, just they're relatable and cool and just kind of interesting vibes about them. And
I think like in the same way, the previous one we're talking about with this like crazy running rubberized style that just like gets at like the motion and the environment. I think the visual style and this one has this that kind of like smudginess that works really well in like the high school scenes, and like you even see him doodling in his notebook in such a part. He's doodling like Neo and Trinity, and like that was
really cute. And the where the camera is placed, I mean, obviously I know the camera is not being placed here, but just like where the angles of the shots are and kind of the way this must have been storyboarded is really interesting and very like fun to watch.
Well, it's what speaking of that, like it's almost like what the camera's pretty still for a lot of it, and it's like a still shot, and it's almost like a photorealistic backgrounds, but then just like the characters are just like being are like blobs moving around, you know, like real fast, like little sketches on top of like real life. It's kind of I think that's another kind of to compare it to the world record one with the rubbery runner. It's kind of like a similar vibe of just like, I don't know, the art also informing the theme of the whole piece.
Yeah, and there's, again, I think there's a tie in, the animation style ties really well with motion. So like when he's skateboarding through the school, that artistic style of the way that the character in particular is drawn really, you know, enhances that experience.
I get who knows, but I feel like this may have started out with an idea of, you know, some sort of, I want to do like a skateboard chase or a skateboard thing. And that sense of movement and everything kind of informing how the rest of the short was animated.
I also think it's interesting, like once he gets that call, like from this point on, it feels like the simulation around him is starting to deteriorate. Like even from, so even with the teacher, like I was like flabbergasted by this fucking teacher. Like I would think like, this is an agent, the way he's behaving. Like he just walks up to the kid, just like, you're on thin ice as it is. And
he seemed realistic.
Well,
in
it
way,
did, but it also
or TV
kind of,
teacher. At
yes.
Least.
It felt like a movie teacher. Like
Mr. Potter.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, if I have to tell you, to, like, you're already failing this class as it is. Like, he felt like the stereotypical asshole movie teacher.
It's a very Snape move.
Yeah, and I love that he did go to the funeral, like, when the kid, you know, dies. That guy shows up there and is like...
As far as I'm concerned, he killed that fucking kid.
Yeah, he's like, you know, there's no way he couldn't take the real world.
He says, like... Kids like those.
Yeah, you literally
well,
chase him to his death.
Someone had been around to prevent that.
Someone should have been medicating him with some blue pills.
Yeah, he should have taken a blue pill.
It was an interesting little because I feel like that happens a lot like in real life. Like it's just very much a throwaway. Like he's probably just got some issue. Fucking give him some medication, whatever. Like you know what I mean? It's very dismissive.
Yeah.
As far as like mental health and stuff like that, because they keep talking like, oh, this kid's depressed all the time and this and that. Like
And it's cool to have that coda where you see Keanu and Carrie Ann Moss. It's a good one. It's hard to talk about because like so much of it is just the beauty in watching the animation on the screen.
Next one.
Yeah. Well, what's the next one?
Is this the haunted house one? Beyond, right?
Yeah.
Beyond.
I think this one's become like it's like still my favorite. I think of it.
What about this one makes it up there for you?
It's like another just aspect of the Matrix of just like the, you know, it's taking basically the black cat from the first one and just like, let's just play with that idea of just like glitches in the Matrix happening.
I do really enjoy how closely cats are tied to the Matrix and glitches in the Matrix and just being around.
Yeah, I think that, you know, maybe cats can kind of sense out those glitches, you know, it's like animals sensing out earthquakes and whatnot.
I think
supernatural. The cats are just kind of drawn to the glitch.
Yeah, cats, glitches, witches, etc.
That's really dumb.
That joke put me in stitches.
Oh! Yeah, I just love the look of this one too, and just like it's so sweet, just like the kids floating around in this that they think is a haunted house, and then it just getting exterminated and turned into like a parking lot, you know.
Yeah, I think this one is the lowest stakes one, yeah, in my opinion.
And it's almost like too, like I, it reminded me, there used to be like by my house, like a dirt, like it was just an empty lot that had like bike ramps in it. And we would go and like hit like dirt ramps on bikes and stuff. And then at one point it got bulldozed over and turned into a house. And that was literally like, that's what this is like, you know.
Yeah, taking. This is definitely like more than, I saw that, you know, the director worked on Kiki's Delivery Service. Yeah,
Koji Morimoto.
And that's something that like kind of sets this one apart a little bit from some of the other ones, is that there's more than just, you know, oh, this is cool world building and cool to think about and all that. This, I think, has a very deep kind of, maybe deep's the wrong word, but a very like personal other way of looking at it, where this is kind of a metaphor for just the loss of childhood magic. You know, things seem magic when you're a kid and eventually that kind of goes away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that this takes a little bit of a step back, chronologically speaking, in terms of someone's age, from kid's story to like little kids and just adults crushing happiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's like, I think that's why the main characters in this are these little kids and then a kind of like teen. Mm. And they both kind of like experience, you know, the kids are the first ones who are like really just going ham on all the magical stuff they can do, and like breaking bottles and watching them be reformed and having competitions to see who can stop themselves closest to the ground. And she's just kind of like, wow, this is incredible. And then the next day, boom, it's just gone. It's a parking lot. And you have the shots of them like throwing the glass and it's just staying broken. It's bittersweet.
Could the machines have found a more boring location than a parking lot to fill it in with? Basically, they couldn't have picked something better for no one to want to be there.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Who fucking cares?
It's a parking lot, probably like with no attached business. So like, not only is it just a parking lot, but it's probably not even being used.
I mean, in fairness, those kids can still go smoke cigarettes and like smash bottles there.
Yeah, that's onto the magic of adulthood.
Kind of magic, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, this one, I love the animation's really kind of cool and bright at points and stuff. And there's like, you know, people smiling in it. Maybe that's why I like it.
Well, but the bottles, the problem is with the parking lot, the bottles don't reform when you break them. So it's like, who cares?
Yeah. Yeah, there's not like what other things were going on with it? Like, some of the other kind of
I like the moment where the dove is slow motion.
Oh yeah.
And then also it like a horizon of light just starts coming down around everything. It's almost like the Matrix is like melting away, so to speak, or something like that. Yeah. So like reality is kind of splitting.
There's a cool effect where the teen is walking through a hallway and she looks around and it starts having this glitch effect, and then all these papers start like shooting out at her, like old newspapers and stuff. And I kind of took it as like, maybe like at different times there were these papers in this space kind of thing, and it's all just collapsing on itself. And
it was kind of funny when we were watching it, I kind of whispered to Ryan, but it reminded me of basically a good version of some of the sequences they did in Dark World. I don't know if you remember, but when they find in Dark World, they find this place that like logic doesn't apply or the rules of gravity are mixed up or whatever. I think there's a specific moment where they're like dropping a can and it disappears and flies somewhere else. I'm like, okay, so this is a good way to do that. And that was like not the best way to do
it. I think
that.
There was some influence from Stalker, the Tarkovsky movie.
Oh, here. Yeah, that's a great point that you brought up. And so for sure there was some Tarkovskian influence going on, especially there's a moment where like this, not rain, but water's falling down. And that's like a direct copy from one of his movies, The Mirror, but also some Stalker going on too. Mm-hmm. That was a great catch.
Yeah, it's like too, like, there's a thing in Reloaded where they, you know, they talk about, you know, the vampires and ghosts and werewolves are always like things that existed in the old version of the Matrix kind of thing. And that's what explains where we got those stories from. And it's just kind of like another thing, like that's what haunted houses are just glitches in the Matrix.
That's the thing. Yeah. It works so well, like, viewing it through the like sci-fi setting, but also through the like, I think, Of all of them, this one works the best for me outside of the actual like Matrix movies. Mm-hmm. Because it is so easily just, yeah, like, yeah, that's the haunted house. Yeah, that's magic. It's, you know, it might involve some green floating numbers, or it might be this just weird, unexplainable house.
Yeah, this episode could work as just like a Black Mirror episode or something like that.
Totally.
Where you have, I mean, you have the exterminators, and you don't have to necessarily know what the Matrix is and all that's going on to get the idea of like something's not right here, and there's this group, shadowy group that's putting it back into order.
Really fucking ruthless too, as they plow through people, just like, you know, it's just like, goddamn Matrix, like, yeah. Cool it.
Well, that was weird too, because it wasn't just like agents. It was like, it was kind of cool too. There's like the last shot of it, or one of the last shots was like a computer screen of it saying like there's an anomaly and then completed. It was just like almost like the, you know, robots just like running a little program, and that might have been like only a second, like in the real world, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like it was just like, oh shit, we gotta fix that, you know.
I do love thinking about it in that context of like adding to folklore in our world, like the blind world or whatever, like just thinking about all these folk tales that have come up throughout history and they were part of the Matrix. So it kind of adds real depth to the Matrix world, which is cool. Really cool.
Yeah. I love it. I love the Matrix.
I wish we would have got a vampire sequence. That would have been cool.
That reminds me. So, and it got me thinking of the first movie. It's been a while since I've watched any of the Matrix movies. But if I remember right, when they're interrogating Morpheus, when Agent Smith is interrogating Morpheus, they got him like chair, and he's got all this shit on his face. Like, don't they say, like, so he talks about the iterations of the Matrix, and like they basically settled on this version. I don't think he says this verbatim, but basically what he's saying is we settled on this version, this time in history.
Yeah.
Because obviously the first, you know, the second Renaissance story in this Animatrix anthology series takes place in the future. There's flying cars and whatnot. But when we get to the Matrix movie, that's obviously like in the for a farther along iteration in the Matrix.
Yeah.
But, so he says, like, we settled on this time in history for you because it was pleasing to you. So it makes me wonder, if we're going to move on to the next story, a detective story, this one seems to be set in, like, a 40s detective noir world.
It's like a retro future kind of vibe where he's typing on typewriter keyboards for his weird computer that's just green screen.
Well, which is, like, it made me wonder, because like at the end he's sent to find Trinity. So I'm just like, does this particular guy have his own Matrix that he's living in?
I think it's just whatever, it's animated and they're just having, he's, because this is another one with the Cowboy Bebop guy, and I think this is a guy who's just, I want to do it like this. I want to do, because this, it's very much, this is a noir film set in the Matrix, and I think he just, screw it, I'm just going to do whatever I think looks cool.
I think that, like, again, works in the frame of, like, this is some, like, professional fan fiction type shit where he was like, yeah, so it's Matrix, but it's the alternate universe where it's the noir, but they've still got computers, and we're just kind of playing with that, like, Trinity, you know, being in this more kind of, like, role than a specific, like, character.
Well, but that's the thing. That's the kind of the anachronistic qualities of this episode, because she's in her, like, you know, BDSM leathery outfit, whereas he's still in detective world. She's the odd man out, basically, yeah. which made me wonder, like, is this some, like, localized portion of the Matrix?
If I'm gonna
put it in terms of, like, continuity, I suppose.
I think I would say, because to me, Trinity seems younger in this than she does later. She has a lot longer hair. And then also, I think, so maybe it is just like another, like, jacked in part of the Matrix, like, you know, maybe even in this guy's universe, it's like that, or maybe this is years before the first movie, you know, kind of thing, because there's a moment where in the first Matrix that Morpheus says to Neo that it's probably real, you think it's the 20th century, but it's maybe really like the 23rd century or something, but it's really not, it's really like 800 years in the future, and not like 200 or 300 years. It's a lot farther than even they know on Zion. And so maybe, like, I don't know, like, maybe this is like 10 years before the movie, and maybe in that version of the Matrix, it at that point it was 40s or something.
Yeah, that's what's so great about this Animatrix is like, and I don't think they really necessarily have to say, because you could fill in the blanks yourself. Like, there have been 6 iterations of the Matrix. These stories could take place at any point within that time frame. So it's kind of just like, yeah, this could just be another version of the Matrix.
Or maybe in that part of that city, maybe that certain city, it's in that time period.
Or maybe like what you were saying, Huff, about the giant cylinders. You know, there could be a couple different programs running here. We don't know if there's necessarily one.
Like one, yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, the nice thing about the world that the Matrix has set up is, in some ways, there are no rules. So it's perfectly fine to make a movie like this.
It's what I was saying earlier that is so cool about this whole thing, the Animatrix, is that it's at every point, it's like expanding what it could be, and it's not really limiting in it. You know, we could be seeing, how Trinity and Neo are actually related in some way, or, you know, all these different, like, it could have gone a very different way, where we come out of this thinking like, oh yeah, I guess this is kind of a small story about these people, but it blows it up at every chance it gets and just makes it bigger. And it makes you ask more questions, which is cool.
And I think this establishes part of adding to the mythology of the Matrix world. This establishes kind of the oldest piece or example of people constantly seeking for the truth, or constantly getting closer to the truth, just like the runner was. He wasn't really seeking the Matrix, but he found it anyways. So I think that's really interesting, that basically instances of people coming close to the truth are not new, and that's cool.
Yeah. This one also, you know, is just beautiful. Like, the black and white, it's in black and white, and it looks like it's kind of like photos in the background, that like some kind of like mixed collage of how they set it up. It's really cool.
Well, it's like I kind of refer to it as charcoal animation, like the way the black and white is. It's very like charcoal-y. But one other thing I love that this episode this installment does, I think it enhances a detail that we see in the first Matrix movie, of the idea of like when they pull someone out, they have a gun like right on their head, because there's the possibility that they can turn into an agent. And what I love about this is that this shows you the alternate thing, the alternate side of what could happen in this instance. Like, the guy could become an agent before they pull the thing out, or before he's fully, you know, made that transition, because he turns into an agent, and they're just, and Trinity's just like, oh shit,
he starts turning. Fortunately, he never fully goes into an agent, but as he starts transition, yeah, Trinity shoots him in the stomach, and then it's just so like film noir, kind of like, well, he's looking at you, kid, and she shoots the window and jumps off the moving train.
Well, I don't know if this isn't necessarily a film noir trope, but we get that moment of the cat throwing him his hat.
That was a great Yeah, when he goes out to start his detective work, the cat has his hat in the cat's mouth and like flings it over to him.
Maybe the best part of the whole.
It's probably the best part of the whole movie.
Yeah, whole thing. Yeah. What a rad cat! A lot of cats in a row in this last couple. Good shit.
And then the next one is Matriculated.
Yeah, what do you guys think of this one?
Yeah, and this is interesting, because it's like, all right, forget about the Matrix. Let's look out in the real world. What's going outside in the real world? And from my point of view, it looks like this is just all focused on, well, there's two things going on, two big takeaways. One, I had a really big takeaway. Like, for some reason, I kept thinking the Droidicas from episode one, like a lot of the robots reminded me of those roly-poly robots from episode one. But also, the most interesting thing about this is that they flipped the whole idea of the Matrix on its head. Like, what if we put the fucking robots in their own Matrix and see how they fucking like it? But the interesting thing is it's almost like it's like humans thinking, oh well, that's kind of hypocritical, but then like trying to explain it away, it's like, yeah, but we're giving them a choice. And then it's like, well, are we really? I feel like we're telling them what, you know, it plays with that. And I love how they flip.
Well, that was kind of the ending of the Revolutions too, was like giving people a choice if they want to be in the Matrix or not. It's kind of playing on that idea. That is a weird one. It's probably not my favorite one, but it's like
really definitely one where I think the animation is not aged as well. You know, some of the other ones, especially, you know, the Cowboy Bebop dude ones, the animation looks as beautiful as it did when it came out, but these ones that rely more on CG, like, and this one's kind of a CG with 2D animation into it. Some of the CG stuff just, it looks old and you know, not as good. But there's still some good stuff. You know, the you know, the way the hair is animated is kind of cool. It has like a weird vibe to it. Definitely stylish.
I definitely think this one survives on its story, not so much its visuals.
I wish that it got to the point where the robot, you know, because eventually they all jack into their own kind of matrix that they've made with this robot. And the idea is they're going to maybe convert the robot to be a good robot.
Yeah, it looks like that's what they're kind of doing, is like training them to be.
I wish they would have gotten to that sooner. I feel like it
in the beginning, like the one that fights for her and stuff.
Yeah, I just think the whole like the whole lead up. I think that what's cool about that is just once they get into the matrix, the fake matrix, and they're having that vision quest. And I think it takes a little too long to just get to it, like get to the.
All right, this is the one where we all took drugs, right? But we didn't. It felt like we did.
Right.
Are you saying that you maybe wanted them to skip all the psychedelic imagery and stuff like that?
No, I'm saying get to the psychedelic. Oh. Like, I wish that... I think in the beginning there's like some, you know... This is something I'll maybe bring up again, but I'm not too interested in like the real world post-apocalypse fight stuff. Like, that just like starts to look kind of generic and samey to me.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. You're already living in one.
Exactly. It's like, more the same. I'm just, like, looking out. It's basically, like, looking out the window at this store here. Like, I don't know. Like, you've seen one post-apocalyptic wasteland. You've seen them all. I don't know. It reminds me of, like, well, this looks like Terminator or you know, The Wastes. But I like once they just, like, jack in and it starts just going
weird. Yeah, honestly. For me, this one really, the takeaway is that psychedelic imagery when the robot is in his matrix training session or whatever, especially there's one scene in particular where he gets drowned by these like black robots and then it does this like liquidy multicolored lava lamp type imagery and that thing just looks awesome. Like it's literally just like lava lamp colors changing. I'm like, oh, this is so cool.
There's some bizarre stuff. I mean, there's like a point where there's like a reverse angle on the robot and you see he's stuck his head through like the screen of a CG movie theater.
And it's like the Looney Tunes background.
Yeah. It's like the, that's all folks thing. And then his face melts off and turns into a ball a lot of this is cool psychedelic stuff on the one hand, but also on the other hand, it reminds me of like early CG tech demo kind of things. Like, look what we can do. We can make a ball go through a drain.
Well, I just couldn't help but thinking, like, how fucked up is this group? That right? They came up with this. This is their matrix.
Well, I think that this is the conversion that the robots require. So just in the same way that humans require some conversion, robots require this conversion that really we wouldn't even be able to understand. This is the only way you could visualize
And that's it. That's what I like about this the most, is that idea of trying to tap into some sort of robot language and the way robots process information being different than humans, like all that stuff I think is really neat.
Again, once again, for the listeners out there, I'd like to point out Ryan is just looking off into the distance so wistfully. He's just, as we're talking about this, like he's just nodding his head like, I've known this all along. You guys are just
you're just catching up. I mean, they said that, like, just like LSD and all that type of stuff is supposed to open your mind to the, you know, the craziness. That's kind of, I think, what they're playing with a little bit here. Because it definitely feels like a little bit like that kind of, if you type in on YouTube or on the old YouTube back in the day, you type in just like LSD trip. And it's like videos like this of just like, just like, it's supposed to like rattle your brain head, you know, kind of
thing. And we even get like robot sex. It's really fucked up.
Yeah.
But one more thing.
Well, those weren't robots. Those were two.
Were they two people? Was that
yeah, they were two of the guys that jacked, or a guy and a girl that were jacked in, that for some reason they were having sex when the robot.
They were trying to teach the robot how to love.
Speaking of sex, one thing I'd like to point out in this particular short, I think, I can't remember if it happens in any of the other ones, but is this our first instance of gratuitous like male or girls in panties?
No,
shot?
It's throughout the whole thing.
No, it's
is
the
it
whole
throughout
thing.
The whole thing?
Okay. Yeah, because the what was the one where they have the glitch in the matrix? Is that Beyond? Mm-hmm. She starts out in her underwear.
Just a kid in her bedroom, though. You know,
big deal. No, well, and there's.
I mean, you can easily just animate some shorts instead of like underwear.
The only one that contextually makes sense is the one by the Ninja Scroll person, because like she's just wearing Ripley's outfit from Alien.
Yeah.
So. I mean, even that one had some gratuitous butt crack.
Yeah, that was a little weird because she's wearing like a size five times too small for her. Like the panties are like covering up like half of what they're supposed to, I think.
So she's comfortable in.
Yeah.
Once again, yeah. See, now Ryan's just like, you guys just don't get it. Get up. See, you're still behind me. You got to get up with me up here. Like, I know the whole score.
I think Ryan's a little bit behind in this case.
But because no one else in all these instances, it's just this girl in her underwear, and like everyone else is fully.
We do get one shot of a guy in the underwear, and that's the last sequence. So we get
that's the worst one.
I mean, it just makes sense. Women are most comfortable in a tank top and panties. It's the most natural outfit. We kinda have
In the movie too, I feel like. I don't know. This is made by two trans women, this whole series, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, but so. They didn't animate this. I think these were all animated by anime dudes.
I couldn't help. So do you guys have any other thoughts on matriculation? All right, we're already talking about the main thing. The main takeaway I had from this prequel story, it wasn't like, oh my god, they're drilling. It was like, are they really just having like a sexy fight scene where they're just like one a little bit? So
we're talking about Flight of the Osiris.
They're just cutting off. Like, this is also, it's important to mention, this is the one like all CGI.
It's CG, but let's make it realistic. I think this one kind of blows. Like, it was
a little bit.
It was entertaining enough to watch.
Well,
but
it just felt like Jackie, you mentioned like fanfic. This one felt the most, this portion of this felt the most fanfic to me. Like, let's get them. Like, so we're gonna do the Matrix shit where they're like in the dojo and they're jumping around and they're like cutting, you know, they're like, it's all sexy and then cutting
them up. Sexy.
Yeah, that's
and
the
it's
thing.
The most it's the most of absolutely the gratuitous one where it's not just is she like in her underwear, she's in a thong, and not just is she in a thong, but it has the thing where she like is, once she gets, because her clothes are just getting torn off by the sword. When she gets into a thong, the camera like finds every excuse to just like,
yeah,
like, and there's really, multiple, really just like slants, it's the whole screen.
She really just curves the ass like into the camera.
Yeah,
frame,
like really
just,
like really weird positions to fight in.
This one is rated PG-13 for sci-fi violence, sensuality, and language.
I do like, in its defense, I mean, the guys being, it's,
I mean,
the same thing with the guy.
It is sensual.
But we don't get that, like, we don't get the ass shot of the guy.
No,
which
I wish
think,
we did.
Yeah, we should. We should. We definitely should.
And the thing, so for me, like, that this whole first part of it, where there's kind of that extreme fight, you know, where they're in the virtual world so they can do all the cool stuff is neat a little bit still, even though, you know, we just talked about and the fact the realistic CG now looks dated. But I think once they jack into the real world and then it becomes, you know, the Sentinel fight, that's where I'm just like,
well,
this
yeah.
just looks like a Michael Bay kind of mess of stuff. It's
it
all
definitely
dark
becomes
and,
the most generic.
Yeah, it's just, but, like this.
And I think even the CG fight where, you know, where they're in the dojo kind of seems repetitious because it's another version of what we saw with the Ninja Scroll version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's in one way it's kind of cool because it's showing these like cycles and things kind of being repeated. But on the other hand, yeah, you're just thinking like, well, I remember when I saw a way cooler version of this.
Well, it's ironic because you can tell this was supposed to be the showstopper. They worked up to this, like, this
I
look at technology.
It was
now.
The first one ever shown, though. Like, it was like the one that
oh,
was,
I guess technically. Yeah,
I don't know why on this it plays last, but maybe because it's like the direct prequel to the Reloaded. So,
and maybe to you, they assumed you've seen it, so they'll put it at the end, kind of thing.
I don't know.
But yeah, I think what it ties into what Ryan's saying, where it's a direct prequel to another of the movies, so you want to end with that piece of information.
Yeah, it's a little prologue kind of to Reloaded, basically. Because it's what they all talk about when they all meet up in the beginning of Reloaded.
And this whole time, you know, when I've been talking about how the movie does a good job of blowing things out instead of making it limiting, I think this is the one example where it starts to... Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like this is making it bigger. It feels like this is kind of making it smaller.
Yeah,
like,
it's directly...
the Matrix can only be these kind of, like, choreographed fight scenes cut to dark, gritty, realistic guns and robots. And it's just going to be kind of that back and forth. Whereas the other ones are just like, anything is possible.
I feel like this one is more bound by the time in which it's made. Because I'm sure, like Dave said, this was hot stuff when it came out. But, you know, this one has aged the most.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing with, like, its crowning feature is being, like, very 2003 and in its visuals. And because of that, it says the most of what it's going to say about being made in 2003 rather than like using the visuals to tell the story the way that like the way we talked about like so many of the others do.
And I think another thing that kind of speaks to the credits of the most of the movie, I would argue, is that like the rest of the sequences for the most part are really good. And this one just does not pack that punch.
It's the one too where it reminds me of that Lion King remake Disney did, where it's like, why is this animated? Why did you do this? What's the point of making this animated other than to just be like, look it, we did it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, yeah, I mean, why not? They're making it. They were like, let's just make a CGI animated thing. And it was, at the time, it was huge. You know, it was a big deal.
Well, I'll say this though. This for the longest time, like, so this is, again, this is my first time having seen this. And for the longest time, the only thing in my mind for the Animatrix was the cover of the DVD. And I just, for whatever reason, somehow it was always such a striking image of the girl, like, lifting, like, the bandana over her eye. Like, it's burned into my memory. Like, when I thought Animatrix,
we're used to looking at faces and we'll connect with
and that. That's on the cover.
Well, yeah, it's on the cover, but somehow, like, it was odd. Yeah, you're, it was right. Just, well, no, it's just somehow the image of her, like, winking almost. It, like, I always remember it. It's, well, no, no, not sassy. I just remember it was just like a, it just burned in my head because I'm like, what? It was weird. It was just, it almost like she's winking. But now that I know the context for that, where she's taking a peek at the dude, like his abs and whatnot, it gives it a whole new meaning. And I'm just like, now I'm going to see that cover in the store and laugh. Because I'm going to think, like, they were having a sexy scene where they were, like, cutting each other's clothes off a little bit at a time. Now I have this whole new understanding of that DVD cover art.
No, yeah, I agree. That image stuck out. That's the one, like, when I think of the animation.
You know what it was?
Cover.
It reminded me of Blade Runner. It reminded me of the scene when they're going through the city in the flying car and you see, like, the geisha, like, with, you know, going, like, hey, like, winking and stuff. It reminded me of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. This is not my. This is definitely on the bottom of the list for ones I like. But it's definitely. I mean, at the time, it was just like mind blowing. You're just like, wow, I can't believe they're doing this. Like, they should make a whole movie like this.
It's just, I can't get over that scene though. Like, not since Batman and Robin have we had a scene where it's just like pecs, boobs, ass. You know what I mean? Like the suit up sequence where it's like showing like the ass like as they suit up. Like, it reminded me a lot of Batman and Robin.
I think it's supposed to be like the sexy tension thing. You know, I don't know.
It just doesn't hold up.
Yeah, it
doesn't,
it's supposed to be the sexy tension thing, but instead it's like weird and goofy and.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, they just messed up on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to think what they would do different. You know, I don't know.
Not have it.
Yeah.
Well, they need it, obviously, so I understand that part.
Yeah, they're just like, let's make a little anime thing, and it's to look as close to the movie as possible, yeah. Really, and to kind of set you in that world. And it had been so long since you've been seen, like. There was a big time jump, or a big, it was 3 or 4 years, or 4 or 5 actually, I think, between Matrix movies from the first one and the sequels.
Wasn't I think it was 4. Like, the Matrix came out in 99 and Reloaded was 03.
04,
I think.
Yeah, 04.
Oh, 04?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, okay. Are you sure that was Revolution?
I thought it was 03.
I think maybe you're right.
Well, they came out like a year apart, right?
Oh, yeah, because they filmed them at the same time.
It was like 6 months apart.
Right,
apart.
Right.
2003, yeah, you're right.
That's right, yeah.
So. It's time for another pill, Dave.
Oh, well, so did you guys get any thoughts on Animatrix? Well,
what was everyone's favorite?
Oof, that's tough.
My favorite was the skateboarding kid one. Was it the kid in a skateboard? Was that the kid story? The kid story?
Yeah.
A boy in a skateboard?
A boy in a skateboard. Jackie, what was your favorite?
Oh, mine was definitely Beyond with the haunted house.
Yeah, I'm with you with that one. That one still, I think that one became my favorite late in the whole process. Of watching these, and still is.
And Morton Hoof, I know Ninja Scrolls is one of your favorite movies. Was the Ninja Scroll animated one your favorite short?
I've been thinking about it. That one's called Program. That one's definitely either... It's tied with World Record. I don't know. I like both of them equally, I think.
World Record is really cool. That's one I could see the argument for that. And Beyond, too. These are all... I mean, there's some good stuff in here.
Yeah, I think that they're all pretty, like... At least 4 or 5 of these are top tier, and I think that they're all, like, they stand shoulder to shoulder.
I think for me, it'd probably be Kid's Story, because I really empathize with the kid and the teacher. Like, somehow that teacher was just such an asshole. Like, I was like, fuck that guy. Like, honestly, to me, that teacher was, like, the best antagonist in the entire run of shorts, somehow.
That's interesting, yeah.
But I think out of all the images in the Animatrix anthology, like, the most striking one for me is the shot of him falling. Like, from that first, from his point of view, falling. Yeah. And like there's that moment where he almost hits the railing.
Yeah,
like,
and it's cool. That's how the movie starts out. Is and it's almost kind of like live action looking.
Yeah, it looked really striking.
And it's really neat to when at the end and you see the first person of him falling, and it may you realize what you were seeing in
yes.
the beginning
and,
of the
and
short.
Plus this one also is bookended in such a way, like it feels like such a good standalone thing. It's got its own bookends, like it could be something you can watch as just a standalone episode, like separate, and it would all make sense. So I'm gonna go with Kid's Story for my favorite.
Yeah, and I think if you're into I think the most crucial one probably is the Second Renaissance, as far as like if you want some cool backstory. Like, that's, like, the one that's, like, the good... That one feels the most, like, comic book and lore-y one, you know, kind of thing. And then... But the other ones are just all good, like, just expansive.
Well, it's also speaking stuff. To the strength of, I think, the Animatrix as a whole, is that you get a little bit of everything. You get the backstory, you get the obligatory bleed into the next movie thing, and then you get these cool little side things that don't have really anything to do with anything, or rather the movies.
Yeah.
Just cool little distractions, like the Ninja Scroll one, which I love that we're just referring to it as the Ninja Scroll one. But I love that this has a little bit of everything. That's how you do an anthology show. You get a little bit of everything.
Do you think, because like a lot of people complain, like, you know, for instance, like Obi-Wan talking about the Clone Wars and you like picturing what the Clone Wars might have been. Do you think that Second Renaissance is worthy of like what
yes.
Morpheus talks to Neo
Absolutely.
About?
Absolutely. It was like, terrifying. It was visually stunning. Like that, my first thought, like, this is stunning. And just really terrifying, like just the way those machines, like the tentacles, sharp tentacle things, like yeah. peeled into people, and like you said, Ryan, like made them like poking into their brain, making them laugh, making them cry, like just figuring out how people work
and
how
it,
they
it
could
didn't
use
get
them.
Into you know, to compare it with the Star Wars prequels, it's not like they got in and started talking about, like, if this was a Star Wars prequel, it would have opened with like the robot country and like their tax policy implicating, like, other, you know, it didn't get into that stuff. It was
kind of interesting.
Let's
though.
Get into that GDP output from 01.
Yeah, well, you're interested because they didn't go over it so much, yeah, so you can think about it. Yeah. It in its telling of its origin story, it was still broad enough that it allowed for a lot of questions, and it just kind of went over a long period of history really quickly, and the way it was told was like it was a myth. So it had still a lot of, within the lines, I think you could still cover in, you know, your details and leave for the mystery.
Hell yeah.
Well, all right.
Take the pill, David.
Okay, Chad. All right. It's blue pill time. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode. I think this lives up to the hype, the Animatrix.
I saw the Matrix recently, again, just the first one, though, not the prequel or the sequels. I think I like this more than the Matrix. I think this is maybe my favorite Matrix-related thing.
Wow, okay. I think I'm still going to go with... some of these, there is a strong case to say for some of these installments, but I think overall I would say the original Matrix is still my favorite Matrix-y thing.
Well, I've never seen The Matrix 4. I know they eventually made one of those. I've never been able to track down a copy of it.
I think Chad's been hiding it. Just between us, like, I think he wants to, like, he doesn't like us talking about this movie. It's a bit too on the nose for what he's doing.
Do not resist me.
I'm sorry, Chad. Okay. Anyway, yeah, great. Yeah, Animatrix. Great movie. I like it. Again, not at all related to the situation we're in.
Hoof, do you think you'll be screening the Animatrix at Citadel anytime?
Yeah, they just satisfy your cartoon love?
Yes, definitely. I think that the Animatrix definitely holds up, and I would recommend it, and we will be projecting it soon on our giant wall of infamy at the Citadel.
Isn't that like a screen made of skin or something like that?
That's what the rumors right. say.
That's what I hear. You know?
Hey, to be fair, the skin really adds. It's like, it's basically like our version of Dolby Vision. It's basically, you know what I mean? It really, it's like 4K, the skin. It really brings out the details.
You haven't seen film until it's been projected on skin.
Yeah, don't ask what the seats are made out of.
Oh, good God.
I thought we just sat on like the rocks or in our cars.
Well, maybe here,
it's like a
drive-in.
But
in Citadel.
That's why I pictured Citadel.
That's why you
like
go
a
to
drive-in.
Citadel, man.
You come
is it like a drive-in? Is it like a drive-in, or is it like a Harkins, or like a little theater you go into?
We definitely don't have seats kept as well as the Harkins, but
yeah, is it like a Alamo kind of situation?
It's bring your own vehicle for the most part.
Okay, so
BYOB.
It is like a drive-in. Yeah, that's what I thought. You guys are crazy.
What? I think you're living in the Matrix, right? Or maybe I am. I don't know. Okay. But that's going to do it for this episode of Apocalypse Radio, folks. This is Dave signing off from Sector 2. Thank you for joining us up on this one.
Thanks for having me. Anytime you guys discuss a cartoon.
Well, I mean, it's good to know that you have your little algorithm in that Chad will notify you whenever we watch a movie. I'm still a little perturbed by that you just snuck that little detail in our contract, but that's fine.
I hope you enjoy those cinnamon twists, Dave.
Oh, fuck you guys, God. I brought you fruit and vegetables.
I don't give a shit about fruit and vegetables, Dave.
Where did Jackie go to do? What is that noise? I guess he's trying the air vents again. Okay. Jackie, can you hear us?
Sorry, I just got this new red dress and I gotta go put it on. Bye.
Do you fellas want to sign off?
Bye!
An interesting case, but nothing to be concerned about. Their memory of the podcast was expunged with no residual effects. They will never pod again. They will never talk again, for that matter. We'll continue monitoring them for a while, but anticipate no problems. A podcast that will live on in people's memories for years to come. What more could anyone ask for?